There was relief this week when a man who hijacked a plane and demanded to be taken to Cyprus surrendered peacefully. Everyone was safe. It wasn't terrorism as we know it today. Actually, it was oddly reminiscent of hijackings that were once so common in the U.S., they earned the name skyjackings. One book looks back on that. The Skies Belong to Us, Love and Terror in the Golden Age of Hijacking. Author Brendan Kerner writes that between 1961 and 1972, nearly 160 American planes were hijacked, with many inspired by the Cuban Revolution.
The only thing these hijackers wanted was transportation to Cuba, which of course at that time was forbidden. So you had many people who fantasized about Cuba being this socialist paradise, this utopia really. Of course, they were quite wrong. Many of them were imprisoned and treated quite harshly, and they sought to come back quite quickly.
But it was so common that cockpits were equipped with maps of Cuba's international airport?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the airline's approach to this was risk management. So no matter where you were flying in the U.S., your pilot would have a map of the Caribbean in the cockpit. And the Swiss Embassy in Havana, which handled American interests there, actually had these pre-printed forms that they would file on behalf of American Airlines to request that the stolen jets be returned at once.
And there was even an idea floated to build a fake Cuban airport in Florida?
That's right. And there were many kind of zany ideas floated. One that sticks out in my mind is to make all the passengers on all flights wear boxing gloves so they couldn't hold guns. But one they took quite seriously, the FAA, was this notion of building a fake Havana airport. And the idea would be that pilots would tell the hijackers, hey, we're complying with your demands, we're flying to Havana, land at this fake international airport, and have the FBI arrest the hijackers immediately. They took it quite seriously, but concluded, perhaps correctly, that it would be way too expensive.
Would it be fair to say that the attitude, if you were a passenger, might be something close to irritation, you know, or even resignation rather than horror, as it would be for sure today?
Certainly for the bulk of the epidemic until the very end, there was a certain nonchalance that people treated these hijackings with. A lot of times people figured, okay, well, I'll go down to Havana, I'll spend a night in a hotel, I'll come back maybe with some cigars and some rum, and I'll have a great story to tell. The reason people felt this way is because there wasn't really a lot of violence at first. The airlines complied totally with all the hijackers' demands, thinking that's the way to ensure safety for everyone. But over time, of course, things did start to spiral out of control. I think the real landmark event in this epidemic was in November 1972. You had three men took this plane and threatened to crash it into a nuclear reactor in Tennessee if they were not given $10 million. Fortunately, they were mollified by $2 million. But pretty shortly after that, the airlines realized that they could no longer put off better security. And starting January 5th, 1973, that was the first day that everyone, regardless of who you were, had to walk through a metal detector and have their bag checked prior to boarding.
That was the beginning of a huge transition in flying for passengers.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's hard for us to process in this day of the lengthy TSA security line how easy it was to get on a plane in the late 60s and early 70s. You could literally walk from the curb out of your car through the terminal, and you will not have to show anyone your ID, a ticket, not have your bags or your body checked by anyone.
So back to this hijacking by an Egyptian man whose main demand was to talk to his ex-wife. Mm-hmm. Did that strike you as a time warp, a return to the 60s and 70s?
Yeah, very much so. The first hijacking I thought of when hearing about the Egypt Air incident was one in 1971. And his motive is that he wanted to get to Milan, Italy. He had a female pen pal there. And he desperately wanted to go see her. That's his only demand. And he was actually killed by an FBI sniper.
Mm. When I was watching it, we were reporting it the other day, I kept waiting for something exactly like that to happen to this guy.
You know, the Cypriots did a really good job. They managed the situation really well, you know, without a lot of practice. So hats off to them.
Brendan Kerner is the author of The Skies Belong to Us, and he's a contributing editor to Wired. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Renee.